Welcome back to the Web Canopy Studio Show, where today, John and I unravel the secrets to speaking directly to your ideal customers and mastering the art of generating lots of high-fit, sales-qualified leads. Let's dive in. Hey, and welcome back to the second episode. So, me and John, we were just having a little chat, and when it comes to marketing, making sure you're speaking your ideal customers' language and using the words and phrases they use is really important. And something as a copywriter, something not so much now because I've been working like with John and other American companies for years now. So my natural lingo is kind of American English, but still sometimes I'll put a phrase in, like a piece of copy, and John was like, yeah, what the hell is this?
What is this? Who says that?
It's all fun. Anyway, so
thanks for
don't worry,
Tom.
Yeah, don't worry, listeners. You don't have to listen to our chats for 15, 20 minutes. We're about to get into some very, very saucy marketing stuff, actually, because at the end of the last episode, John, you teased essentially running a masterclass funnel to build trust amongst your prospects so that when they come to make a decision about whether to buy or even who to buy from, they're going to choose you because you have given them this great value. So on a high level, I know we spoke about it in the last one, but for anyone who didn't listen to that, can you just briefly explain the masterclass concept and the emails that go before and after that, and we'll dig a little bit deeper in afterwards?
I sure can, Tom. Thank you so much for asking. I thought you'd never ask, my friend. So here's at a high level, here's what this looks like. And I can tell it in the story a little bit better. So let's imagine you are going to a conference and you are speaking on stage at a conference. And the conference is just, maybe the room that you're speaking in is just 200 people of your exact kind of audience, your prospects, the people that would end up being your customers, your clients. At the end of that presentation, so you're going to get up and you're going to talk to them and help educate them on stuff that they probably aren't aware of, or at least have some idea of, but they're trying to get a deeper understanding. And so you're sharing like these really great tips or things to be prepared for, or strategies or tactics or things to really dig into their position and what's going to help them in their business. And the only thing that that's going to do, unless you're just absolutely horrible at presenting, which even people that think they are not, the only thing that that's going to do is build authority and trust and credibility, right? And so think of any conference you've ever been to. We've all been to a trade show. We've all been to hearing somebody speak at a convention or something. At the end of every single presentation, what happens? The speaker walks off stage and there's four people waiting in line to talk to them. And they give them their card and they say, oh my gosh, Tom, that was awesome. This is exactly what we've been talking about in our business. I'd love to set a call up next week and just kind of learn a little bit more and bring in my teammates. And so you literally are just generating leads while you're there, generating call opportunities. But the even cooler part is there's 11 people in the audience as well who are like, oh my gosh, didn't even think about this. I got to tell Sally when I get back on Tuesday so she can go look this up and learn more about it as well. So that model is the perfect sales model, by the way. Like, that's how so many great salespeople in the past would host these great workshops, webinars, in-person seminars, and so on. And it would be so powerful for them to build that rapport and that relationship and that authority with people. They would just have a constant stream of new customers. We want to replicate that in our model online. And so in order to do that, we want to be able, because obviously we can't send you out to, you know, 30 different conferences throughout the year. Maybe you can. If you can, it's much better to do it in person. So in order to do that, we want to replicate that online. And obviously, the easiest one to think through is like a webinar. Everybody's done webinars. Most of the time, webinars are done wrong. People kind of go about it the wrong way. But this concept doesn't have to necessarily be a webinar model. It can be done through several different ways. So that's kind of a high level look at it, Tom.
That's awesome. I was going to ask you actually something else, but you mentioned something right at the end there that I think our listeners will find very valuable about a lot of companies or people do the webinar model wrong. So, what do they do that is wrong, and what should you do that is right?
Yeah, so most webinars today are, again, like I'm just looking at it from a software perspective. They're usually geared towards customers or people who are already well aware of the company, and it's very heavy on the company. And so those presentations tend to be a little bit more focused on what this business is, what the product is, how it's going to solve different problems for them, and how they can get involved in the next steps. And that last part, in a good presentation, if you watch any of these really powerful online sales pitches or anything like that, like the back half of the entire thing, at least the back third, is a sales pitch. The whole thing. It's not just a little, oh, if you have like one slide at the end, and like, oh, if you have any questions, you're really interested, go ahead and book on my calendar right here, which is how most people are afraid to ask for the sale. You're not asking for any sale. You're just giving people the opportunity to connect with you. So, where it's gone wrong is looking at it from that perspective. The right way to think about this model is breaking this down into three sections. There's three key sections that a good presentation has in it. The first one is nothing but getting on the same page, getting on the level of the people who are listening, who are watching, who are there. You want to immediately draw a connection between them. They need to know that you know what they're feeling, know what they're experiencing, that you have been there, or that you have lots of people that you work with that have gone through this exact same thing. And the more you can drill into that, the better. You don't even need to talk about what the content is yet. You just need to get on the level and describe that to them. Best way to do that is through stories, through examples. Okay. And so starting off those presentations, getting on the same page and helping them, because now you're human. You're not just this person who's going to try and sell you stuff and nobody really cares, or eating pizza while they have this on in the background. You're going to get them engaged. Because if I'm listening to somebody say, literally, John, these are the things you're experiencing in your role, and it makes you feel like this, you're probably doing this wrong, you probably tried doing this, these are probably the outcomes that you've experienced. You've also probably done this. Let me tell you a story of how this happened with one of my customers or with me personally. You immediately have my attention because that's a problem I'm trying to solve. And so that first part is that. The second piece is, well, I mean, obviously you introduce yourself, like give some background credibility, but the second part is, how are we solving that? How are we fixing that? What is the meat of this presentation? And so usually you want to put those into like groups of three, like here are the three ways to XYZ, or the three things to prevent this from happening, or different. You could do all different kinds of campaigns with this. And then the back part is
In
literally
fact,
your entire pitch.
John, I just want to interrupt you there, just
Yeah.
because I think an important point to make with that middle part, the how to do it, sort of the main filling of the presentation. You want to be giving away information that is actually useful to people, even if they don't buy. And I think that's key, because where you said where a lot of people go wrong, they maybe just give value and don't pitch.
Yeah.
Or I've also seen presentations where it's just been like a few minutes of value and then a really long pitch, like a timeshare
Yeah.
salesman in Orlando, for example. So this middle part is vital, because if somebody hears your offer at the end and they're just not quite ready to buy, they're still going to walk away thinking, well, even though I got pitched at the end, that was still so cool because I can actually implement what I learned. So then what's going to happen when they are ready to buy, whether that's 2 months down the line, 2 years down the line even, they're going to be more likely to come to you because you've already helped them. And it's that law of reciprocity as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And because you've done nothing but build authority. And so when there is an issue, and because it's probably not the only thing they're getting from you, so they're probably also getting other resources as well. And so this middle section of you giving good value to them, when they are in a buying position, they are seeking something out and they're comparing people. It's like, well, this company I have no idea of, but John and Tom, they shared all this really good stuff. And I really enjoyed, it'd be great to see what it's like to work with them. Let me go talk to those guys.
So, just on that point, still, people might be wondering how much information should I give away? So, and I guess it depends on what you, Mr. or Mrs. Listener, what your business is and what it is you're actually selling. Because if you're selling information of some kind, or like maybe you're a marketing agency and you might be thinking, well, I don't want to give away all of this information because I need people to come to me. That might be a different topic versus somebody who's selling like a physical item. They probably don't mind giving all the information away. But how, if you had to sort of generalize here, how much information would you give away and withhold?
Yeah, so this is a common question. And you're going to see answers across the board. My general take is to give as much away as you possibly can. Why? A few reasons. Number one, they're not going to do it. Like, you can give all of these resources to these people, tell them exactly what they have to do. They're not going to do it. Somebody might be savvy enough to then go and try and figure it out. But like, I'm a service-based business, right? I could tell you everything you need to do to run HubSpot the right way. And I could literally write it out step by step for you, and you can go and try and figure it out, but it's going to take you considerably longer to figure that out than it would just my team coming in for 4 weeks and you guys are good, right? And so that's the whole kind of concept. And that's honestly, that's the pitch of whatever it is you're going to do. So like, the more you can express how complicated it is, not in a bad way, but like, there's a lot to this. It's not just a, oh, I can just solve this problem with the snap of my fingers. It's, here's the problem. Here's the misconceptions about it. Here's what people probably are thinking or what you might have tried doing and why that's a problem. And here's actually the steps to go about fixing that thing. And that's like one pillar of three or four, right? And so I always like to end that section with, if I'm in your shoes, here are the things that I'm going to, here are the seven steps that I have to do in order to fix that. And everybody writes it. Oh, I've got to write that down. There's a screenshot, which is great. The ability for somebody to just go and execute on that is rare. It's a great habit to try, but it's rare. So, and generally the people that are really interested in how that happens, they don't really have the time to do it, or they wouldn't be watching the presentation in the first place, because clearly they have that problem. And so it's, think of the best business book you've ever read, any business book or any book about your career. Like, I have read some business books and I'm like, holy crap, this is the holy grail of what I have to do right now. Like, I could just take this book and implement it. I read that book 8 years ago and I still haven't implemented it, right? And I still think of this same book, Content Inc. by Joe Pulizzi. I still think of this book all the time. And I've only been able to ever really implement the tiniest little pieces of it. Guarantee, if I would have Joe's pitch at the end of the book to like get on a call with his consulting team, if I did that back in 2015, 2016, I probably would be in a different position in my business. But that was just like, that's a great example of show everything you can. It does nothing but lend credibility and authority to you because you're willing to share. Like, you're a good person and you're providing really good value. You just don't have to give them, or they just won't be able to replicate it, except for those that can actually go through and do it.
And also, like you mentioned about seeing speakers get a line of people at the end of their speech to come and speak to them, even though they might have given a pitch at the end of that presentation themselves, they might not have even given one yet, because they've given so much value, people want to speak to them. But the important caveat of that is that if you do actually pitch your services properly at the end, you're always going to get more interest and generate more leads than if you just leave it up to chance. So that brings us on to the third part of the masterclass. Yeah. So take it away, John.
The third piece of this is literally just saying, all right, so far we've gone through and I've got to be on their level and I've acknowledged who they are and what pains they have. And they're seeing me. It was more of like, I'm with you. I understand you. I've been in this situation, or I work with people who are in this exact situation. The second part is, these are those pains, and this is the steps to solve those. This is the process to go through. And throughout, there's all kinds of little things. Like, we need to be sprinkling in testimonials and graphs to show what happens when it is fixed and so on, just to build that kind of case study there. So we've gone through, here's how we're going to fix it, and you're welcome to take it. So at the end of this, we're getting to the third piece. You have all this information. You're welcome to take what we've gone through and implement it on your own. And please use me as a resource. I'm happy to help with anything in the future. We've got tons of information on our website. But if you need to fast track this, if you want to go a little bit faster, if you need to get to these results sooner and you don't have the time to do all of these things on your own, let me walk you through what it looks like if you wanted to go to the next level with somebody like us. And so now they're free to leave if they don't want to stay for the pitch. You've just basically said, I'm going to show you how you can do this faster. So you're not like, and now I'm going to sell you this big major thing. You're literally just providing them a path to do what it is they already want to do in a faster route. And there's some other little quirks that we can get into on inside of that, of just like how the whole thing is phrased and set up and so on, and what kind of a presentation this is. But the value there is so good, because you're going to have people stay and hear throughout the entire pitch.
That's awesome. And something you said there was really important as well, where you said it's all about getting them the results faster. I think in the B2B world, if we're selling something high ticket, and whatever high ticket means to you, it's going to vary to different people, but generally in the thousands of dollars, if you're doing that, speed is almost always, no matter the business, the most important factor. Because any company with the budget to work with you, if you're a service-based business, or like buy your like products, if you're a physical product or a SaaS business, any company that you want to work with, they're generally going to have a big budget. They're going to have money anyway, which means they're probably already doing the thing that you're selling. You're just giving them a way to achieve the end result even faster, if that makes sense. And I think if in your marketing, you can really emphasize that speed, and you don't have to necessarily say it directly, oh, you're going to achieve this way fast every time, even though that would be good as well, especially if you can get stats that back that up. But if just generally you can hint at achieving the end outcome that they're looking for even faster, that's going to be massive. And for somebody, maybe a CMO at a company, like, who needs to really get results for the CEO, if he can show that CEO that he can get results in 3 months rather than 9 months, then guess what? He's going to look really damn good. He's going to get a bigger bonus, and his job's going to be like more secure. So I think that's a really great point you made. Just in your marketing, emphasize that speed if your product or service is going to help them achieve the result quicker.
Yeah. And it's not just service businesses either. So let's look at it from a software, a higher end software. Like, let's take HubSpot, for example. So if I was HubSpot and I was doing this process, the way I'm going through it is I'm looking at it from the perspective of my user, whether I'm trying to sell to like a VP of sales who needs to incorporate this with his whole sales team, or I'm looking at marketing directors or CEOs or founders or whatever it might be. I'm going to go through this same kind of model. So I'm going to talk about, I'm going to get on their level initially, and I'm going to talk about, how do you solve this problem? It might be a very common one that HubSpot solves is, oh, I've got 17 different tools and they're all, some of them talk, some of them don't. I spend forever doing reporting. I'm lost. I feel like I'm on the chopping block because people are starting to wonder where the ROI is of all the things we're doing, and I can't really show it. So there are all these like common things. And so a presentation from HubSpot in this situation would literally just break those down, and it would go through, here's what you would do to fix that. Here are the processes you need to go through. Here's how you need to look at your reporting. Here's where you need to pull in this information. Platform agnostic, just what you should do in that scenario, right? The pitch is, now, if you're tired of using all these tools, you don't want to use 17 different tools to do all of these things, we have a solution that actually does everything in one platform. And so then they're going to talk, like, if you'd like us to go through it, we're going to go through and walk you through what it might look like if all of these were connected. And so they've just essentially pushed this into a demo of the product that can now be shared, and people are going to pay attention and be engaged, because I am this person, I do have those problems. I do want to see the solutions as you kind of laid it out. I could try and figure all that out, but I don't have the time because I'm already working 60 hours a week and I can't prove my value to my company. You're showing me a demo of what it is that's actually going to solve the problems, and I can probably pull the budget from all these other tools that I'm using by getting rid of them. Like, no brainer, I'm staying to the end. So software, it's not just a service product. It's definitely relatable to software as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, HubSpot probably should sponsor this podcast already with the shout out, the many shout outs we're no doubt going to give them, because they are such an amazing platform.
I know we have a lot of HubSpot users that watch and listen to these things. So it's just an easy, relatable example. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, John, that is the masterclass. However, that is not the only thing in this process, because if you can have a masterclass, but you actually need people to attend. So how do we get people to attend the masterclass?
Great point. So let's actually change it from just from that perspective and look at it as like, is it even a masterclass? Is that even necessary? So we talked about webinar. You could position it as a webinar. For a long time, webinars were super popular. Then they got really burned out. Nobody wanted to do any stupid webinars anymore. So then marketers had to ruin everything and change the names and, like, you know, just disguise it as different ways. Now, I'm not a big fan of pulling the wool over people's eyes. So I try and be as transparent as possible. And I want our customers to do the same thing as to what it is that they're doing. In many cases, we will simply, for our own marketing, we'll call these like free trainings, or this is a 40-minute session on this topic. No, don't even necessarily have to call it a webinar or a masterclass. Sometimes we do. I typically would just have a rule of thumb of being like webinars being live, recordings, trainings, masterclasses kind of things are pre-recorded, or maybe they're an on-demand webinar that we did previously, like that kind of a concept. Yeah. So you'd want to think through that. The other thing that I think is really important is to look at even the whole model and expanding it into different ways. So here are just a few different ways to think about this presentation model outside of just a traditional webinar. You can do multi-week boot camps or cohorts and do those live. That works very, very well, especially with a small group of people, because now you're building one-on-one time and group time as a community of people, and you're building that relationship, and you're doing it for multiple weeks in a row. And so maybe each week is a different topic, 6 weeks long kind of thing. And you're putting in effort to do some outreach and one-on-one and say, hey, let's do a quick discussion on the side about where you're at and how we can help, or what kind of questions you might have for us. Now you're having a phone call, an exploratory call, a discovery call, and the customer won't even realize it. You could also do, and we've had a lot of success with workshops, and we do those as paid. And usually we'll block out an entire afternoon. And so we'll say this is a 3 hour long workshop session. And rather than just doing like three or four pillars, we will do live exercises. Okay. And so instead of saying like, let me just tell you these, it's I'll present the information. We're going to have a quick assignment and we're going to work through it together. For example, it might be like positioning on your homepage and talk about content and forms and different things like that. So there's lots of different ways to play into that as far as how do we try different things other than just a webinar model. I will say if people pay, they stay. So you will have fewer. Sure, you do a free event. You might have 200 people sign up. You might only have 45 people that actually come. If you have a paid event, you might have 50 people show up. The last one I did, we had 50 people show up, and I think I had 49 still when I pressed end at the end. So like they stayed and they don't disappear, and they open the emails afterwards as well. You don't have to make it expensive.
And even on that note, with those numbers where you said like only 40 people out of the 200 might watch if they haven't paid versus 50 out of 50 if they have.
Yeah.
Even if you're just getting 10 people who have paid versus 200 like people who haven't paid one penny, I almost certainly think if on the back end you upsell them into a higher ticket thing or sell a higher ticket product, I'm not going to guarantee it because in marketing nothing's guaranteed, but I'm almost certain that even just out of a pool of 10 buyers, you're probably going to make more money on the back end out of these versus the much bigger pool of essentially freebie seekers.
Yeah, big time. And the lead in, like the workshop itself, when we do those, it's not really about making any revenue. We might sell them for, you know, $30 or $50. It's just to qualify the audience, because I want to make sure that if we're going to take the time to do a 3-4 hour long session, I don't want to do it for free and have nobody pay attention, and then I'm just talking to my camera for 3-4 hours. And that's not fun. And so I'd much rather do it where I know there's going to be people who, even just $30 paid to come to this half day seminar workshop thing, and they're getting value out of it, and they're communicating, we're talking, it's an open forum kind of thing, we're sharing the examples of what we built, we're doing live critiques on there with them. From a software perspective, this could easily be things about like walking through what it looks like to migrate or to onboard or to get started or to use these different integrations and tools and so on. So there's so many different ways to look at it, not just from a service perspective.
Also, we've predominantly spoken about it from a service perspective or a software perspective. What about, and something that's just come in my mind, what if a listener's thinking, I sell a physical product, what can I actually talk about? And when I say physical product, I'm not talking about your typical t-shirt, maybe a much higher end physical product, maybe a manufacturing piece of equipment, whatever. How can they use this concept, be it a workshop, a masterclass, to educate their perspective, their potential buyers?
Great question. The example I gave of the software company earlier that was in the OSHA compliance certification space is a good one, although that is software. We also have had a number of clients in like logistics or manufacturing, and the it's hard to just say, hey, we're going to do a presentation on your process chain build. Like nobody wants to really come to that. That's dry and it's boring. But what they will want to participate in are things to be aware of that's going to impact how you're actually running your business or doing business in the future. So if you are a manufacturing company and there are changes in the industry, regulations, there's things with inflation, there's banking things, there's so much that would be impacting that you are probably very privy to as your company is in your industry, but your customers might not be. And so the more you can talk about that supply chain logistics and timing and regulations and so on, and what to be prepared for the big changes coming in 2025 and things like that, you're going to have an audience there because they will need to pay attention and be aware of what's going to happen and how it's going to impact their business.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think if you can, no matter what type of business you run, and no matter what you sell, if you can tie it into something topical, like you just said, John, that's going to be really powerful. So if that you know something is going to come up that is essentially going to change your prospects' lives in some capacity, they're going to have to do something differently. Then if you can create a masterclass or webinar or whatever on that, then people are going to be much more likely to sign up just because there is that pressing pain point. So if you can make it topical, that's even more powerful. So,
Huge
John,
point. Yep.
do you think we should carry on talking about the emails now, or should we leave our listeners hanging a bit and wait until the next episode? What do you think?
There is quite an art form to the emails, isn't it? About
It is.
like
It is.
onboarding emails or getting people to even like sign up, to show up, follow-up
Yep.
emails, to engage and so on. No, we can go ahead and talk about it. I think we can hit it
Yeah, I
and
agree.
go
And
through that.
yeah, this is exciting stuff. And hopefully you're feeling as excited as both myself and John. So, John, when we're going to attract people to our, I'm just going to say masterclass, but we've covered it. It doesn't have to be that. Yeah. So when we've attracted people, so we've got people to our masterclass, but how have we done that? How are people actually landing on a masterclass in the first place? I've kind of given it away already by saying emails, but go into more depth.
There's your email nurturing is going to be critical here. And again, the important thing is that we're saying the right things to the right people. The last thing we want to do is talk about us, talk about your product. I gave an example of getting an email while I'm in my inbox looking for things that I have to do right now. Contract agreements. Oh, I've got to book a call or somebody booked with me. I've got things that I've got to get to my HR or whatever. Like I'm busy doing something, so I go to my inbox to get something done. The last thing I want to see is you emailing me telling me you want to give me a demo or you want to show me the highlights of the last month. Because it's just not relevant. It's not important to me. And so what would be important to me is highlighting those pains and those the ways that I can overcome the things that I'm experiencing right now or the things that I need to be prepared for. So your subject lines are critical. The body is also critical of the content, but coming up with a really great 3, 4, 5 email process to send to people in a campaign to get them to sign up for the presentation, whether it's recorded, whether it's live, but getting them to engage in that. And then having just as important, if it's live, you have to have another email series to get them to show up. And the best part of doing those would be to kind of sprinkle in the content. Don't just use the Zoom basic ones that says, oh, you've signed up to attend. Here's your details. Don't forget it's in 24 hours. I want to receive an email that says in the first point that John's going to talk about on this presentation is going to be about this big issue, and just tease it out because it's going to make people want to come and hear how that's solved. You can be as salesy as you want. Depends on how, like, what your industry is. Obviously, if you're selling to like HR people, they're not going to really be interested in being sold to. But you want to be specific in that content in getting that drip to come. Now, the last piece of this, so they sign up, they're on a landing page, they're there, they're in the webinar, the masterclass, boot camp, whatever it might be. Almost just as important as the actual event itself is the follow-up. 50% of any call I've ever booked has come from follow-up emails, not from booking on the event. I can't tell you how many times in the last 10 years I've done this, and I get done, and like the afternoon goes by, the next morning comes, and I don't have any calls booked, and I'm like, man, that sucked. We didn't get anything. I had one person book on my calendar during the event. And so I'm feeling deflated. Over the next 2 weeks is when my follow-up drip is running. And when it's all said and done, I might have 14 calls booked on my calendar from that whole series. And so it's super critical to have a really good high impact follow-up sequence of emails that are hitting them at the right time without being spammy. Mm-hmm.
And what we found to work well is 5 invite emails and then 5 follow-up, because it's a good number. On the invite front, if somebody hasn't clicked that they or hasn't registered for the event after 5 emails, they're probably not interested. Some people might argue, oh, go 10 emails, go 15 emails. But realistically, that's just probably going to annoy more people than you're going to get on by sending those extra emails. And on the follow-up side as well, hopefully they've stayed on your presentation long enough to hear the pitch. They probably, again, don't need more than 5 emails. And again, there's probably going to be some really good salespeople in here thinking, nope, you need to hit them until they say no. But remember, these are marketing emails. If you look at the lead score stuff, then you might actually think, do you know what? This person's worth hitting up separately from a sales point of view. But 5 follow-up emails are generally perfect, especially because, John, I don't know if you've noticed this, but a lot of the people who actually book a call are probably going to come from the very last email within the sequence, just because that's where the deadline is. So if you can install a deadline into any piece of marketing you do, as long as it's legit, then you're going to get more people taking action, because I've been there so often in life where I've had all the time in the world to do something with no deadline. And guess what? I've never done it. A good case in point.
Yeah, a
good case in point. When I went backpacking in 2019, good job I did it there, because that was my last chance to do it before lockdown. But I went backpacking, and the first thing I did if I went to a city around Europe was go and visit the castle, because I love medieval history. So I'd go and visit the castle. I then spent 3 months in, 3 months literally just in Krakow in Poland. And they have this big castle there. And I was really excited to go and see it. And I said, oh, I'll do it before I leave. And then the next week, I'll do it probably next week. And then the next week came and I said the same thing. And guess what? I never saw it once in 3 months. No, because there's no deadline. Whereas when I was backpacking, it's like, okay, I've got 3 days here. I know I'm only here for 3 days. I need to do that now. And that's the same with marketing. So make sure, if you are going to do one of these campaigns, make sure you put a deadline in there. Make sure you stick to that deadline, because if you then don't stick to it and people think, oh, I can just join whenever, that's not going to be good for you in the future, because they'll realize that when you say there's a deadline coming up, or maybe you even say anything, they're going to be like, oh, are they actually telling the truth here?
Yeah.
So just stick to your work, but stick to your word, but put in a deadline. I can't emphasize how important that is.
Yeah. The offer at the end of your presentation can't just be book a call. I know we've been saying that is like that's the goal. Yes, I want to have a sales call. Absolutely. Full transparency. But it's not like the offer can't just be the same thing that it is all the time, because there is no scarcity. There's no urgency. It's just like you just said, it's like, I'll just do it when I have time to do it. And when I'm thinking about it, I got the rest of the day, I'm super busy, and then you forget about it. So for example, I mean, one of the things I love the most is just creating offers at any time. So like, let's take the safety company that I was sharing before, that software. Yes, they want to do a demo of their product for you. That's what they want. Their offer should be something like, we're going to do a one-on-one safety, like 2024 guidelines to see how well you are prepared for these changes. We'll do a complete audit, completely free. You just got to book a call. We'll get going with one of our specialists. We're only going to do them through March 5th. Like, boom, that's done. That's a great offer. There's a timeline. There's a window. Maybe we only have the capacity. Our CEO who never does these is going to do actually the first five because he wanted to go through personally and do it. Now there's a scarcity. There's a number that we can only apply to if you want the specific person to do it. And so you can be as creative and as in-depth as you like with those. But the important piece is that you add that urgency and that scarcity and that you're honest and sincere, that it's not something I can just go find on your homepage and sign up for. It needs to be unique to that particular offer. So create an entire campaign, the whole kind of marketing backwards model. Like, the last thing I want people to do is to book this one-to-one HubSpot audit. Well, we'll get in and deep dive inside of your HubSpot portal with you. It's not something we just do, but that might be what I'm pitching as my particular sales goal right now. And then maybe I'm only going to do 10 in the month of April or 10 in the month of June. And so once that 10 quota is filled up, or once June comes, like, there's no way to get on the calendar anymore. So then your emails are all kind of conveying into that model.
Yeah, that's fascinating. One other important thing before we wrap this up, I just want to talk about the offer itself. So you've just said there it needs to be unique, not something that they could just find on your website. But what actually goes into making an offer really, really strong, where people are going to be like, I need this?
Man, I don't know. That's a loaded question. You might have to take that one. Yes.
So for me, an offer ultimately comes down to three things. The first thing is urgency, which we've just spoken about. Like, you need to engineer your pitch in a way that makes people realize that this is a now problem, not something that can be done later. Even if it can be even if it is something that can be done later, you still need to make them believe that this has to be done now. And it comes back to that speed thing we were talking about earlier. Like, let's say your target audience is a CMO and you say to them, okay, well, you can do this yourself, figure everything out. And it might take you 12 months to do, and you might not even be able to finish this project because you might have a few hiccups along the way. And then your CEO is like, oh, this isn't going well, scrap it. And that doesn't look good for you. Or you can just work with us, and in 3 months, like, you're going to achieve X, Y, and Z. That's a Z for you Americans.
Yeah, come on.
So engineering that urgency is really important. The second thing is around price. Now, I'm not a fan of just making stuff cheap. Nobody has ever bought something cheap and they're like, yes, this is brilliant. People don't actually mind spending good money on stuff that is going to be beneficial to them, whether that's a monetary ROI or just something that improves whatever aspect of their life they're trying to improve. However, nobody likes overpaying, no matter what it is. So you need to make sure that the price of whatever it is you're selling seems like a bargain. So even if it's 100K, you need to make people think that, wow, like, this should be costing like 250K and I've only got it for 100. That's amazing. The way you can do that is to talk about the ROI, if it's something which will have a monetary ROI. Like, if you can generate 600K from this, then 100K just seems like, well, yes, I'd be an idiot not to do this. Another way you can do that is to discount something. Again, I'm personally not a huge fan of just discounting stuff, because talking about the long-term philosophy of your company, if people come to expect discounts, then they're not going to buy when you sell stuff at full price. But you can run special offers at various times in the year, maybe Black Friday, maybe like a holiday, or any time. The important thing is you just have to give a reason why you're discounting it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So they're the first two things and the main things that go into a really good offer. And then the third one is, and it sounds quite simple, but a lot of people get this wrong, it is just about making sure that whatever you're selling and however you're presenting it is something that your target audience actually needs. Because I think we've all been there. We've sold something and we're like, wow, this is going to be out of this world. The sales are going to be brilliant. And then it's like, oh, crickets. because it's not something that people actually want. So when you have those three things, a product or service that people actually want is going to solve a very real problem. When you have that urgency in place to make them think, okay, this is something I need to solve now as opposed to later. And when you have that price justification in place that makes them think, okay, this is a bargain, no matter how much it costs, then you're probably on the right track to do pretty well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that one is really big. That's a really important piece, is that thinking about, is this a nice to have or a need to have? Do I just want this or do I actually need it? And helping to get the positioning to show these customers, these contacts, that they need this is so important. That the same example of the safety software for contractors and construction companies. Yeah, like that's a nice to have. If I just say, hey, I've got a software that will help you track this, like, well, I'm already tracking in spreadsheets. Okay, great. So when they start to say, okay, what happens when, it's a $2,000 a month software. I don't know, I'm making it up. It's a $2,000 a month software. Oh, I don't want to make that investment. Okay. So when you get slapped with a $3 million lawsuit because of all these different things you didn't keep track of, and you have some in spreadsheets, some here, that $2,000 doesn't sound that bad. Right. And so it's a very, very easy way to start positioning around nice to have, need to have, how urgent is this, how important is this, tied to the content of what we just talked about, of like, oh, these are like the regulation changes coming in the next year, and here's how to prepare for those. You're providing so much value, and then you're showing how your product or your service can actually help make that a reality. It's really important.
And that example you just gave literally hit all three of the buckets that I spoke about: the urgency, like you need it now before you get sued, the price justification, like $2,000 a month versus potential $3 million lawsuit, and then it's something that they actually need. So I think on that we should probably wrap up, because we've given a lot of value away in this episode.
Look at that.
Yeah. Time flies.
Yeah, that's nice.
So next episode, John, what are we going to be talking about?
Ooh, I think we should chat about, Mr. Tom, we should chat about, okay, so this episode is about looking at ways to get people on a sales call, ways to impact your funnel and get people engaged with you. But it those are kind of heavier lifts of like big commitments of time. And like, I've got to set aside a block of time to go through this with you, or maybe even do a live with you, or maybe even weeks long. What about a model where it's no touch? How do we use something that could be completely no touch and still get that value of qualifications and getting people to buy into your company where you don't have to be involved? So we will chat through that on the next episode.
Awesome. Very, very excited. As shall you be too, once you've listened to the episode. I guarantee that this stuff is really cool, and John is very much a real life expert when it comes to this. So, as you are with everything, John.
Oh, stop.
Yeah. So thanks a lot for listening to episode number 2, and we'll see you in the next show.